You're listening to a podcast right now. Driving, working out, walking the dog. If you're into podcasts, chances are you have something to say too. With RSS.com, starting your own is free and easy. Upload an episode and we distribute it to Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Amazon Music, and hundreds more. Track your listeners, see where they're from, and start earning from ads like this, even with just 10 listeners a month. If you've been thinking about starting a podcast, this is your sign. Start free at RSS.com.
You're listening to a podcast right now, driving, working out, walking the dog. If you're into podcasts, chances are you have something to say too. With RSS.com, starting your own podcast is free and easy. Upload an episode and we distribute it to Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Amazon Music, and more. Track your listeners, see where they're from, and start earning from ads just like this. If you've been thinking about starting a podcast, this is your sign. Start your new podcast for free today at RSS.com.
So while doing background research for this podcast, I watched a lot of videos made by people who are really good at explaining science. And one of the people I enjoyed most was Joe Scott of the YouTube series Answers with Joe. He covers all kinds of fascinating and weird science topics, including my personal favorite about whether octopuses are aliens. And while he's not a scientist, I really appreciate his way of making difficult concepts easier to grasp, like the rare earth hypothesis, which we talk about in this extra episode of Wild Thing. We also talk about tardigrades, von Neumann probes, octopuses, of course, and the idea of panspermia, which is the hypothesis that life didn't arise on Earth, but was seeded here by asteroids that slammed into the planet in early days. Those asteroids might have had little microbes or the chemical precursors for life on them, which they'd carried from some other part of the galaxy.
That's the general idea, yeah. Panspermia is the idea that life originated somewhere else and landed here one way or another, either purposefully or just by accident, yeah.
Given your research on it and given the stuff that you've looked into and sort of explored, like, what are your thoughts on this?
Well, it's funny. I actually just did a video where I talked about some of the first life that may have formed on the planet. And you're talking about like the last universal common ancestor, LUCA, which is basically the very first life that sprang up. There have been bacteria found in rocks that have been locked away for like over 200 million years. So they were able to survive that long outside of the elements and outside of any source of energy or anything like that. People love to talk about tardigrades, how they've taken tardigrades up into space and they survived. There's an Israeli lander called the Bereshit lander that landed on the moon. It more crashed on the moon than landed on the moon, but it got to the moon, so that's something. But it had tardigrades on it amongst all these, you know, instruments and tools and stuff. And so tardigrades can survive, you know, in the vastness of space and the vacuum and the radiation and everything. You know, so the question becomes, could something like that have hitched a ride on a comet or an asteroid? I mean, there's that asteroid they found in Antarctica that was broken off from Mars, which just think about how they had to figure that out. You know, like there was an impact on Mars that threw this piece of rock off and it floated around in space for a while and then landed here on Earth. But you know, in the early, I mean, we think that most of the water on Earth actually came from comets in the early stages of the solar system, that it was called the late heavy bombardment. It was just like billions of comets that hit the Earth and seeded it with water. That's a lot of opportunity for something to have, you know, come down and kind of started things off. I mean, it all kind of comes down to, how did life actually form? This is one of the big mysteries that goes way bigger than aliens, you know? I mean, was it literally just a little bubble of lipids that contained a small amount of organic molecules that had been smashed together over billions of years to a point where it could like self-replicate, and that little bubble of lipids gave it a place where it could self-replicate, and then it started like replicating itself, and next thing you know, you have single cell life. Is that more plausible than it started somewhere else and landed here? I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, it is definitely a black box from what it sounds like. Two questions. One, can you explain what tardigrades are for the uninitiated?
They've kind of had a little bit of internet fame, a little bit of virality, although they're not viruses. So tardigrades are also called water bears. They're these tiny, I say they're microbial or microscopic. I think you can actually barely see them with the naked eye. They're like half a millimeter or something like that. But they have six legs and they're kind of cute. So people kind of fell in love with him, but they're almost indestructible. Like they can survive just about anything. They do it by going into a state called a Tun state. That's a T-U-N is how it's spelled. Mm-hmm. So it's almost like a, for lack of a better word, like a spore. Like it kind of turns back into this solid seed kind of thing.
So they get like a hard candy shell.
Yeah, exactly. So they don't melt in your mouth or in your hand or whatever. But yeah, so it gets like a hard candy shell, and then they can protect themselves against pretty much anything. It's kind of like they can what is it? They can like push all water out of their body and just kind of enter this suspended state of animation, and then when they get back in water, they can just rehydrate and keep going like nothing ever happened. They're amazing, hardy little creatures, and they are also cute. So, you know, can't beat that.
But are they aliens? I mean, I guess they are if we put them on the moon now, but
right. They're moon aliens.
So that kind of brings me to another question about panspermia, because there's definitely a possibility that as humans move out to other bodies in the solar system, we're the panspermians or the vehicles for panspermia or whatever the name for that would be. Because it's not quite like asteroids crashing into a planet, but it could be that we're the ones that end up seeding other parts of the solar system with life accidentally.
Well, so back to the tardigrades thing just real quick. So have you heard of the Breakthrough Starshot program?
Yeah.
I don't think this is actually in the works. It might just be people talking, but there were rumors or discussions around possibly putting tardigrades on one of those things that could fly out to another. I don't know what the purpose of it is. It seems like something somebody would just say, you know, but somebody was talking about putting tardigrades on one of these little solar sails and flying it out to Proxima Centauri. So, I mean, there we go. Like the very first thing we send out of our solar system to another star might have life on it.
That seems yeah. bold.
Like I said, I don't think anybody's seriously considering doing it. It seems really like a bad idea.
Right.
But I mean, just the fact that we're talking about it, or that somebody was talking about it.
I don't know. I mean, isn't this one of the big concerns with going to Mars, is that we would bring little bacteria with us and they would like set up shop, and then we would never know whether Mars had its own life or if we had just happened to accidentally bring something with us.
That's something I struggle with a lot. I mean, with you know, SpaceX talking about going to Mars so quickly and everything, it's like, yeah, how once we set foot there, it now has bacteria. So how do we know if it's us or them? Yeah.
We're going to give Mars COVID.
Oh, quickly. Yeah. Or some new version of it.
Yeah. Yeah. How do we know if it's us or them? And that's one of the big questions, too, about panspermia is like, if you're finding life on other planets that looks like life here on Earth, then there's this question of like, are these all these different planets being seeded by the same source, or is life just arise the same way over and over again?
Have you talked to anybody about Europa?
No, I haven't.
Okay. Well, Europa is a moon around Jupiter. So there are a couple of missions in the works to go over there where they're actually, the plan is to drill under the ice, because the idea is that it's an ice covered world, but it has a liquid ocean underneath it. And it might even be warmed by tidal forces from Jupiter, or, you know, internal heat like our planet has.
Mm-hmm.
And so, I mean, the idea is if there was, you know, warmth under there in this planet wide ocean underneath the ice, it's had as much time as we've had. What are the odds that maybe there's some at least biological or microbial life down there? So that's super exciting to me. If we went to Europa and found even single celled life there, and could look and see how much different it is from what's formed here on Earth. First of all, the idea that life sprang up twice in one solar system, I mean, that bodes really well for there being, you know, other life out there in the universe. But also just to be able to look at it and see, like, is, you know, that's kind of one of the big questions about life. Is it like a constant of the universe? Is the universe almost like, for lack of a better word, designed chemically to create life eventually, or is it just like this crazy aberration that happened in this one place? And if we found it on Europa, that'd be amazing. I really can't wait for that to go up and see what they find.
One of the things that I think is kind of interesting about Starshot is actually the thing that you brought up, where they're talking about putting the tardigrades on there. But there's also this idea of like von Neumann probes, where you would send like these Starshot things out to other planets, and then they would replicate themselves and keep going, which is, I guess, kind of like panspermia of ideas instead of microbes? That maybe that's a bridge too far.
There's definitely a school of thought that if we ever were to discover aliens, it wouldn't really be the aliens themselves. It would be something like that. It would be probes that they sent out that have become self-replicating, or some digital version of themselves that they sent out because they, you know, uploaded their consciousness to something. Just because that can survive the environment of space where a biological body can't. You know, like that's what's actually going to, I mean, it might be what happens with us, you know, mm-hmm. It might turn out that crewed spacecraft, you know, maybe we get to Mars or something, but to really like travel throughout the solar system, it's just too much. It's too expensive. You got to carry too much along the way. You got to feed yourself, you know. But if you could just upload your consciousness to a probe, that's pretty far down the road. But, you know, if you could do something like that, then you could, you know, technically fly around forever. There's a school of thought that that's more likely what we're going to run into should we ever, you know, run into aliens or their own Voyager probe that just kind of like got away, you know?
Yeah. I mean, I guess the question is like, if somebody picks up the Voyager probe, or maybe they already have, and they have they've decoded that golden record and they're like, wow, their music's amazing. Let's triangulate this back to Earth, or even something like a von Neumann probe. They just keep replicating and replicating and going out and going out. And if someone finds it and picks it up, you're hoping they'll be able to discern what your civilization is based on this very narrow and tiny grain of intelligence that they've gotten from this probe.
You know, just to kind of put it in the perspective of deep space and deep time, that this is going to go out there and it's going to travel forever and it's going to leave our solar system and who knows where it's going to go, you know? Like,
yeah.
It's really more of like a message in a bottle.
Yeah.
Or a time capsule, you know, just kind of like, I did a video on Voyager and I kind of at the end tried to, I don't know. It's one of my more favorite endings to a video because I basically like, I showed the pictures that are on the Voyager record. Mm-hmm. Like they actually encoded photographs into it and played the sound that's on there, which is basically like hello in all these different languages and stuff. And I started thinking about like if/when some alien species were to ever find this, we would be long gone. Like humans would not be a thing and hadn't been for a long time. But someone out there, some alien species is going to find this, they're going to decode it, and they're going to see these photographs of ourselves, and they're going to hear our voices, and we'll be ghosts. It'll be, you know, that will be the thing that outlives us. And that's kind of weird to think about, but cool too.
Yeah, it is cool to think about. So actually, one of the episodes I'm doing is about METI. And, you know, the sort of back and forth, should we be sending messages into space?
Mm-hmm.
And this was, I think, one of the questions about Starshot, too, is where some of the other breakthrough projects are passive, where we're just observing. Starshot is definitely like, we're sending something out there, and if they actually get the technology right, it's going to get out there so much faster than a lot of the other stuff that we're sending,
because mm-hmm.
They're headed for Alpha Centauri. And yeah, it's like, okay, well, if there are aliens over there, they're going to find out pretty quickly that we're around. Are we sure we're ready for that to happen?
Mm-hmm.
What are our reactions going to be? How are we actually going to communicate with them? So the METI people are doing some interesting thoughts on that.
I talked to somebody from METI a while back, and I can't remember who it was. It was a couple of years ago. But it's yeah, that's a hotly debated thing. Like, should we be putting our own messages out there? I've been wanting to do a video that basically looks at like how far our radio signals have traveled out from where we are in the galaxy, how many stars that would have passed, and which one of those stars could have possibly had, you know, an Earth-like planet on it that where somebody could have been there to hear it. It's probably not that. It's actually very humbling when you look at how far our radio signals have spread into the galaxy. It's a blip. It really hasn't traveled that far.
Yeah, it's not far. Not far at all. I mean, further than we ourselves have traveled, but yeah, we have not gotten super far. So one of the people I talked to is this guy named Lawrence Doyle, who's with mm-hmm. SETI, and he's looking at non-human communications.
Mm-hmm.
And he is actually doing non-human communications with, he's like preparing to communicate with aliens by trying to communicate with animals.
Okay.
So he's doing all this stuff with like dolphins and whales. Mm-hmm. Anyway, he was very fun to talk to.
That's why Arrival is one of my favorite science fiction movies, because the entire movie is just about like, how do you communicate with these things? And that's what it's going to be like. I mean, the idea that was kind of my point talking about octopuses, that the they've got this weird hierarchy of brains in their body. It's like a whole different kind of intelligence that we can't even fathom, you know. But that's what aliens are going to be like. Mm-hmm. I mean, if we can't communicate with animals on our own planet that grew up in the exact same conditions that we did, you know, what are the odds that we're going to be able to communicate with something that grew up in completely different, evolved in a completely different environment?
You're listening to a podcast right now. Driving, working out, walking the dog. If you're into podcasts, chances are you have something to say too. With RSS.com, starting your own is free and easy. Upload an episode, and we distribute it to Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Amazon Music, and hundreds more. Track your listeners, see where they're from, and start earning from ads like this, even with just 10 listeners a month. If you've been thinking about starting a podcast, this is your sign. Start free at rss.com.
That's why I liked the way they did it in Arrival. They didn't speak at all. It was just these, like, you know, circle grams, you know, yeah, that you had to figure out. And they spoke with it. They worked through time differently. That's another thing. Like, everything about how an alien species would think is something that we just can't conceptualize. And the way we're going to communicate with them. I mean, almost you could go back to Close Encounters. They use the, you know, do, 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 do. You know, maybe music's an universal language, you know. Mm-hmm. But that's super interesting to me. Like, where do you even start with that?
Yeah, and how do you decide? Yeah, I mean, there are so many different ways to communicate. It could be, what if they don't have eyes? Like,
or maybe they have eyes, but they don't see in the same visible spectrum that we do. Their visible spectrum is something else.
Yeah, it is a lot of fun to speculate on the possibilities. So octopuses, we're sure that they are from Earth.
From what I researched for my thesis video, they did the genomic sequencing and determined that they are definitely close enough to everything else here that they can say it came from the same ancestor.
I'm a little disappointed in that. I was kind of hoping they were aliens.
I know, yeah. It'd be a lot more fun if they weren't, yeah.
Or if they had been just like another version of life that had arisen here and then...
Yeah, I liked that too.
We're part of a completely different...
A different epigenesis, is that the word?
Yeah. I mean, because if it happens once, why couldn't it happen more than once? But I guess if everything is still structurally the same, you might not be able to tell the difference.
You say structurally the same?
Well, like in terms of, if like... Let's say life arises once, but if you still have the same materials and the same building blocks and then you have epigenesis again, they might still be so similar that life arising twice wouldn't look any different. Like when you bake a batch of cookies, if you use the same ingredients and all of the conditions are the same, they're going to turn out and the cookies should be indistinguishable from one another, even though they're separate batches.
Sure. Yeah. That kind of goes back to the Europa thing. Like if we could find even single-celled organisms on Europa and, you know, we could compare it to what, you know, we have here on Earth. Like, is there only one way to make DNA or are there many? You know, are there triple helix DNAs? You know, I mean, there's so many different questions there.
Right.
When I was researching that octopus video, I was kind of hoping that I could find some proof that maybe it was a second epigenesis. I mean, because... Again, you're talking about billions of years. What are the? I mean, it almost seems weird that it only happened once.
Right. That's kind of where I am. Because if it only happened once on this planet, what's to say it didn't only happen once in the solar system, like or in the universe?
Right.
So you have read and researched about extraterrestrial life over the years. What do you think is the most compelling argument for extraterrestrial life?
Okay. Well, when you talk about extraterrestrial life, I feel like you have to kind of separate extraterrestrial life and aliens, you know, like it's two different questions. Is it that there could possibly be alien life out there somewhere in the universe, or have they visited us, you know? So the evidence for there being any kind of life out there somewhere, it's just the numbers game. You know, I mean, when you just look at the scale and the vastness of the universe, it just, it seems almost impossible that there's not somewhere out there, at least, you know, microbial life. But, you know, when you talk about aliens visiting, that's a different thing.
And that, I'm guessing you don't necessarily buy into that idea.
I'm skeptical. Yeah. I mean, I'm really on, it's difficult for me because I love me a good alien story, you know?
Right.
I love it just as much as anybody else, but, you know, a blurry photograph of something that is kind of speeding through the air and we don't know what it is, it's going to require more than that for me. If aliens legit landed on Earth, it would be, you know, 9/11 times infinity. It would be like the biggest news story that in the world, you know? I haven't seen anything that has completely convinced me. Don't get me wrong, though. Like the Navy footage of the weird black thing that's swirling around. It's intriguing.
Also, the other thing I find interesting is if aliens are visiting us, why would they necessarily be coming now? Why wouldn't they? You know, if you want to throw time into the mix, there.
Time messes a lot of things up. When we start talking about like the Fermi paradox, you know, like why aren't we seeing radio signals from aliens all over the place? Well, when you look at the 4.5 billion year history of the Earth, and only in the last 10,000 years, actually only in the last 100 years, have we had radio signals going out, you know. When you start looking at it like that, if that's how long it takes for life to form on a planet, then, you know, and who's to say that our civilization is going to last too much longer beyond this? You know, are we going to go another 10,000 years? That's questionable at this point. So how much time does a species have on a planet to be visible? You know, it might not be that, it might be just a, you know, a blink of an eye in, you know, universal time.
I sat down with Frank Drake.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, it was about a year ago now, but he was also saying the other thing is our technology is improving so much that we don't have as much leakage going out into space in terms of like satellites and radio signals. Like we're much more contained to the point where it's going to be much harder to find us. And if we're evolving, our technology is evolving to that point, there's always the possibility that another alien civilization, which likely would have existed before us, theirs has already vanished and is hard to see.
That's actually a really good point. Of course, Frank Drake would come up with a good point like that.
Yeah, he's I don't understand how people sort of just think that way naturally. Like for me, I've got to read a lot of stuff and talk to a lot of people before I even start to grasp that stuff. And he's just like, well, here's a theory, and it becomes the theory.
yeah. Have you talked much about rare earth hypothesis?
No, I have not. Do you have thoughts on it?
I have many. Yeah. So I've been doing the YouTube thing for 6 years now.
Mm-hmm.
And it's funny because I'll go back and I'll look at some of the videos in the earlier days, and I was much more woo-woo back then. You know, I was much more open to kind of crazy ideas like that.
Yeah.
And over time I've become a lot more skeptical, and it's 90% just because I only spend enough time on each topic to know how much I don't know about it. So I definitely always fall back on what the experts say, you know, like there's interesting ways of looking at things and I'm totally up for exploring them. But if the experts say that octopus DNA is from Earth for sure, well, okay, then they're from Earth. You know, I'm not gonna challenge that. I don't have the PhD to stand up to that.
Right.
But one of the things that I have just kept running across over and over and over and over and over again is this idea that Earth is really weird. Like this is just a very, very unusual planet.
Mm-hmm.
You could go down this big long list of things. The moon, for one thing. We have a very oversized proportional moon. Like it's, if you look at the kind of moons that Mars has, Mars has two moons. They're basically captured asteroids. They're just like these little dinky things. We have this giant moon. And what that did was it stabilized our spin over, you know, billions of years. So whereas other planets might wobble quite a bit in their spin, which throws the climate into all kinds of crazy fluctuations, ours stayed relatively stable. I say relatively because even still, it varied quite a bit.
Right.
But that's one thing. we also are in that Goldilocks area, you know, in our solar system. So there's luck there. Plate tectonics. We haven't found any other planets that have plate tectonics with, you know, the crust that moves around and combines and stuff. Volcanoes spewing compounds, carbon compounds into the air and stuff like that. Maybe that has something to do with it. There's a lot of people that think that life may have formed around, like, you know, geothermal vents at the bottom of the ocean. I just found out recently that even the Milky Way is in a weird place in the universe. Like we're actually in sort of a void where it makes it less likely, because, you know, there's all the gravity forcing all the galaxies together. There's a lot of galaxies that collide. Andromeda eventually will collide with us in like 3 billion years or something and make Milkdromeda, which is the silliest name ever. But
wait, what's the name of it?
Milkdromeda.
Milkdromeda. Oh, my God.
That's what we will be called. Because we'll still be around for sure.
Yeah.
No, that's what our galaxy will be. That's what they call it when Andromeda collides with us. That will happen in a very, very long time. But that happens a lot more often in other parts of the universe. I literally just found this out on a video that's coming out this next Monday. I interviewed somebody about this. We're like in this weird galactic void where our galaxy hasn't been collided with, you know, by other galaxies. We have this. We have Jupiter. If it wasn't for Jupiter, who like kind of sucks in a lot of the debris of the solar system, our planet would have been smashed by comets and asteroids a lot more. There would have been a dinosaur killing asteroid every million years or so. So, I could keep going. Those are just, plus you just get to like the chemical composition of the Earth. You know, we happen to be around just the right kind of star. I mean, there's just this big long list of these incredibly peculiar things about Earth, and of course we all evolved here, we live here, we think this is normal, but that's just our perspective because we're here. You know, as we look out into the solar system, into the universe, we just keep finding out, no, we're the weirdos. Earth is a very weird place. And again, it's a numbers game. Out with what is it, like 100 billion stars just in our galaxy, and we are pretty sure at this point that every star has at least one planet around it, that we're kind of assuming that at this point.
Mm-hmm.
So numbers wise, yeah, somewhere out there this has reoccurred, but it might be way, way more rare than we think.
That's so fascinating.
It's intriguing to me.
Yeah, I mean, it's like, you know, even thinking about the evolution of life, like there's so many steps that had to happen, and they had to happen at a certain time in a certain place under certain conditions. And so it just puts.
Well, and even so, yeah, if we're right and it only even happened once here, even in this incredibly special place, life really might just be a thing that's just, you hesitate to use the word miracle when you're talking about science stuff, but it's kind of a miracle.
Yeah.
You know, that it happened, that all these pieces came together like this. I just did, on the same video that I was just talking about, I did an interview with another YouTuber. Her name's Dr. Becky. She is an actual PhD astrophysicist from Oxford.
Okay. So
she's got slightly better credentials than me. But she made a point that I thought was really interesting. She said, you know, early on, we thought we were special. We thought that the sun revolved around us and the universe revolved around us and created by God and all that kind of stuff. And then over time, we began to realize we were much less special. You know, we were just like another planet in the solar system. We're just another star in a galaxy. But then it's all kind of almost reversed itself again, because we started to realize, as we looked out and looked at everything else, oh, we actually are kind of special. This is actually a very unique place in the universe.
Yeah.
I mean, that's super interesting to me.
That it is. It is really, really interesting. All right. So knowing all that and having had all these conversations, if you were a betting man, where would you put your money on when or where we find life? Or if we find it?
Ooh. I have sincere doubts that it would happen in my lifetime, which is sad. I mean, there's a lot of, well, okay, let me go back. okay. Actually finding the life, probably I don't think would happen in our lifetime, just because you'd have to get there, you know? But having said that, there's so many new telescopes on the way, including the James Webb, which fingers crossed will go up next year. Mm-hmm. So it's going to be able to just see at a detail that Hubble couldn't have possibly imagined. And when you look at what we were able to get from Hubble, that's insane. We might be able to find a habitable planet pretty soon through various, there's the James Webb. There's also like the 30-meter telescope going up in Chile and a new one in South Africa. I mean, there's all kinds of just amazing telescopes on the way. So we'll probably be able to find a habitable planet, but in terms of actually finding the life on that planet, I think we're still pretty far off.
That was Joe Scott, host of the YouTube series Answers with Joe. To geek out on more science and astronomy topics, check out his YouTube channel or follow him on Twitter, @AnswersWithJoe. You can follow us, too, @WildThingPod. And for more about Wild Thing, check out our website, wildthingpodcast.com. This podcast is a production of Foxtopus, Inc. Our executive producer is Scott Carney. Editing is by Alicia Lipinski. And the score and sound mixing come from Louis Weeks. I'm your host and creator, Laura Krantz.